Written by Peter Edmund Carrington, narrated by Wyatt Reeves, first recorded 2026, and now, The Brink. Prolegogry, the U-2's discovery on the morning of October 14, 1962, a United States Air Force U-2 reconnaissance aircraft took off from Edwards Air Force Base in California and flew a long arc over western Cuba. The pilot, Major Richard Heiser, was executing a mission that had been debated, delayed, and finally ordered by President John F. Kennedy's administration after weeks of political pressure from senators who claimed Soviet military construction in Cuba was more advanced than intelligence assessments suggested. Heiser flew at altitude above the island, his cameras clicking in long passes over the terrain below, and returned to base without incident. The photographs he brought back would trigger the most dangerous crisis in the history of nuclear weapons, a 13-day confrontation between the United States and the Soviet Union that brought the world closer to thermonuclear war than it has come before or since. The photographs were processed that night and examined by intelligence analysts at the National Photographic Interpretation Center in Washington. The analysts had extensive experience reading aerial photography. They had been studying Soviet military installations for years, developing the expertise to identify weapon systems from the shapes and shadows recorded by cameras flying 7 miles above the earth. What they saw in Heiser's photographs was unmistakable: the early stages of construction of Soviet medium-range ballistic missile sites in western Cuba. The missiles that would be installed at these sites could reach Washington, New York, and most of the major cities of the eastern United States in a matter of minutes. The discovery was reported to McGeorge Bundy, Kennedy's national security advisor, on the evening of October 15. Bundy made the decision not to wake the president with the news. There was nothing to be done that night, and Kennedy would need to be fresh for what followed. He woke Kennedy on the morning of October 16 and delivered the news. Kennedy's response, by multiple accounts, was controlled but intense. He called together the small group of advisors who would constitute the Executive Committee of the National Security Council, XCOM, and began the 13 days of deliberation that would determine whether the crisis ended in war or peace. The United States and the Soviet Union had been building toward this confrontation for more than a decade. The Cold War, which had defined American foreign policy since the end of World War II, had produced a nuclear arms race of terrifying proportions. Both superpowers possessed enough nuclear weapons to destroy civilization, and the military doctrines of both sides rested on the assumption that nuclear war was both possible and potentially survivable. The doctrine of mutual assured destruction, the understanding that a nuclear first strike by either side would trigger a retaliatory second strike that would destroy the attacker along with the attacked, provided a grim but functional deterrent against deliberate nuclear war. What it could not prevent was the kind of miscalculation, accident, or crisis escalation that might trigger a nuclear exchange that neither side had intended. The Cuban Missile Crisis was exactly such a potential miscalculation scenario. Nikita Khrushchev had gambled that placing Soviet missiles in Cuba would shift the nuclear balance in the Soviet Union's favor and demonstrate Soviet resolve to allies and adversaries alike. Kennedy had gambled that the United States could not tolerate Soviet missiles 90 miles from its shores. Both men were rational actors pursuing what they understood to be their nation's interests. The 13 days of October 1962 demonstrated how close rational actors pursuing rational interests could come to irrational catastrophe. The background, 1959 to 1962. Chapter 1. Castro's Cuba, Revolution, Nationalization, and the American Response. The revolution that brought Fidel Castro to power in Cuba on January 1, 1959, was one of the more improbable political transformations of the 20th century. A young lawyer from the Oriente province who had been imprisoned for a failed 1953 uprising, exiled to Mexico, and returned with 82 fighters aboard a decrepit yacht called the Granma. Castro had spent 2 years fighting a guerrilla war from the Sierra Maestra Mountains against the regime of Fulgencio Batista. By December 1958, Batista's army had collapsed. His support among the Cuban middle class had evaporated, and the dictator fled the country on New Year's Eve. Castro entered Havana to popular celebration that was genuine, at least initially,